Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 2.
The section titles themselves are Understanding the True and Wonderful Principle of Bodhi.
Right, and Subduing Demons and Returning to the Original United Spirit.
It immediately signals, you know, a journey, learning, challenges.
Oh, absolutely. Bodhi points towards enlightenment, understanding, and subduing demons. Well, that screams conflict, overcoming obstacles, maybe even inner ones.
And that last bit, returning to the original united spirit, sounds like a search for wholeness, right?
Exactly. Inner peace, integration, sets a great stage.
Okay, so let's dive in. The story picks up with Mesadu, our handsome monkey king. Quite a title.
It is, and he's just gotten this name.
And he's thanking Jerry Pudis, Thenji, the Bodhi patriarch. But what gets me is the next step. The patriarch tells the others, okay, teach him basic etiquette, daily chores. It feels surprisingly down to earth for someone apparently destined for greatness. Why start there, you think?
But that's a really good point. It kind of underscores that even amazing journeys need a solid start, right? Like a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Before you get the big secrets, you need discipline, routine. You got to learn how to learn, maybe ground yourself.
Yeah.
Think about learning anything complex yourself.
Oh, totally. You can't run before you can walk. The basics are crucial.
Exactly.
And it goes on for quite a while. It takes us 6 or 7 years. He's in this cave, learning manners, scriptures, calligraphy.
Plus all the chores, sweeping, gardening, hauling firewood and water. It's not glamorous.
No, it paints this picture of a really thorough, almost monastic grounding. What's the takeaway for us, you think, from this long basic training?
I think the key insight, maybe for the listener too, is just the sheer value of patience, diligence, especially early on. It's not just about the skills, it's building character. Humility, maybe? Perseverance. It shapes him for what comes next. Mastery takes time, even the boring bits.
Makes sense. Then comes this pivotal moment. The patriarch gathers everyone for a lecture on the great Tao.
Ah, the big lecture.
And the description? A shi. Heavenly flowers falling everywhere, golden lotuses springing from the earth. I mean, can you picture that?
It's incredible imagery. It instantly tells you this isn't just another lesson.
It really stresses how profound these teachings are, covering the three vehicles, all dharmas.
Basically, the works. Spiritual philosophy, deep insights, the falling flowers, the lotuses. Those are classic symbols, right? Auspicious signs. Means something truly special, truly enlightened is happening.
Okay, okay. And the Monkey King's reaction is just brilliant. He's totally losing it with joy.
He really is.
Scratching his ears, grinning like mad, can't stop dancing and stomping.
Pure, unfiltered enthusiasm. It just bursts out of him.
And that's what catches the patriarch's eye, right? This wild reaction. What's that tell us about him?
It just highlights his genuine passion, I think. His thirst for this knowledge. It's not intellectual curiosity. It's like visceral. He feels it.
Yeah.
Sets him apart from the others, who are probably more composed. Shows his unique spirit. Have you ever felt that, like when something just blows your mind?
Oh, definitely. That spark. So naturally, the patriarch calls him out, asks why he's disrupting things, and crucially, how long he's been there.
And the Monkey King's answer is interesting.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know, 7 years. I ate peaches 7 times from that mountain back there.
And the patriarch identifies it, Lan Tao Shan. Rotten Peach Mountain.
Which means, yep, 7 years. It's such a simple, almost earthy way to mark time. Why peaches, do you think?
It's clever, isn't it? It gives a concrete measure for the Monkey King, who maybe doesn't track years like we do.
Right.
And maybe Rotten Peach Mountain. Maybe a little hint about, like, the fleeting nature of worldly things, cycles of consumption he's now moving beyond.
Ooh, interesting layer. Okay, so after establishing it's been 7 years, the real quest begins. The patriarch asks what kind of Tao he wants to learn.
And the Monkey King's just like, anything, teach me anything. Total eagerness.
But the patriarch lays out options, gates or categories. Wu, Yu, Jing, and Dong. It's like a spiritual menu.
Exactly. Different paths, different approaches to cultivation, to understanding the universe.
What do these paths represent, broadly?
They're like fundamental approaches. Practical skills, philosophical schools, inner stillness, active practices. The patriarch is letting the Monkey King sort of feel out where his own inclinations lie.
Before guiding him.
Yeah. It respects the individual's path. Yeah. How do you learn best? Hands-on, theory, reflection.
Good point. Okay, let's look at the first one. Shu, arts, skills, divination, seeking good fortune.
Right, but the patriarch immediately says, cannot lead to immortality.
And the Monkey King, bam, won't learn it, no hesitation.
Tells you everything, right? His goal is crystal clear, immortality, nothing less.
He's not interested in shortcuts or just like gaming the system. He wants the real thing.
Exactly. Filters out the distractions immediately. Very goal-oriented.
Okay, next. Lu Flow. Schools of thought. Confucianism, Buddhism, Taoism, medicine, all that stuff.
The patriarch uses that analogy.
Mm.
Azu.
A pillar inside a wall.
Okay. What's the point there?
It suggests, well, support, structure. But it's dependent on the wall, right? It's not freestanding. It's ultimately unstable if you're aiming for real longevity. Vulnerable.
So relying on these external systems won't get you true, lasting immortality.
That seems to be the implication. And the Monkey King, he even admits he's not great with marketplace talk, asks for clarification.
Which is kind of charming, actually.
It is. And then he rejects this path, too. He wants something more fundamental, maybe. Not just theories built by others.
Makes sense. All right. Third gate.
Of a show.
Stillness, fasting, meditation, breath control, the quiet practices. But the analogy here is Yeltsu Ti.
Unfired clay in a kiln.
Yeah. Looks solid, right? But what happens in heavy rain?
It just washes away, dissolves, impermanent.
Precisely. Without some kind of inner fire or transformation, just being still isn't resilient enough.
And the Monkey King finds this analogy kind of, a bit absurd.
Yeah, he sees the flaw immediately, rejects it. Shows his quick mind, I think. He gets that real strength isn't just passive.
Okay, last offered path, Dong movement. Active stuff like sexual alchemy, physical exercises for longevity.
Right, striving through action. But the patriarch compares this to Hu Shun La Yue.
Trying to scoop the moon from the water, classic illusion.
Exactly. You can see it, reach for it, but you can never actually grasp it. It's not real.
So chasing illusions won't work either. And again, Monkey King says nope.
Rejects it flat out. He's learning to see past the surface, past mere actions or appearances. He wants substance.
He's got incredible discernment for someone relatively new to all this.
He really does.
Yeah.
Which leads to, the next bit.
This is wild. The patriarch, seemingly frustrated because the Monkey King has shot down every option.
Doesn't argue. Doesn't explain more.
He just walks over, hits the Monkey King 3 times on the head, turns, leaves, and shuts the middle gate.
Seems like a punishment, or at least a total dismissal.
But it's not. The Monkey King gets it. It's a code.
Yeah, astonishing intuition.
3 strikes means the 3rd watch of the night around midnight.
And leaving through the back door, closing the main one.
Means come to the back door then for secret teaching. Incredible.
It really shows his intelligence isn't just book smarts. It's perceptive. He reads between the lines. The patriarch was testing him. Guiding him subtly.
It's a reminder that sometimes the deepest lessons aren't spelled out, you know? You have to be receptive. Have you never had a moment like that where the penny drops without explicit words?
Definitely. Those intuitive leaps. So, sure enough.
Midnight comes. 3rd watch. Monkey King finds the back door just slightly ajar.
Sneaks in. Kneels by the sleeping patriarch. Waits patiently.
The patriarch wakes up. They have a quick exchange. You understood, of course. And boom.
The patriarch recognizes his innate capacity, his readiness for the real secret.
And he agrees to teach him the secret of immortality, finally. And it's summarized in this verse. Can you read it again?
It's really about internal cultivation. It points to the Jingqi Shen, essence, energy, and spirit as the absolute fundamentals of life.
The building blocks.
Exactly. And the key instruction is to cherish and cultivate these to Yeshun, carefully secure them, keep them tightly stored, don't let them leak away.
So it's all about internal preservation and refinement, not external tricks or philosophies.
That's the essence of it. The true and wonderful secret lies within. This is the big aha
moment. So he gets the secret and then silence for 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years pass.
Yeah.
He's secretly practicing, cultivating what he learned. Integrating it.
But then the patriarch comes back with not exactly good news.
No. A warning. About the Nanzalihai, the 3 calamities or disasters.
Which will hit him every 500 years. Yikes.
Yeah. First, a massive lightning strike from heaven.
Yeah.
Second, an yin fire that burns you up from the inside out, from the soles of your feet to your core.
Oof. nasty.
And third, I, Guang, a bizarre, powerful wind that seeps into your body and just disintegrates you. Bone, muscle, everything.
Jeez. So achieving immortality isn't the end of the story. There are still these cosmic threats.
Exactly. It adds stakes. It means true liberation isn't just about living forever. It's about overcoming these fundamental cosmic dangers. You need wisdom and power to navigate them. It's not a simple level up.
No kidding. The Monkey King is, understandably, terrified. Begs for a way to avoid them.
But the Patriarch initially refuses. Says the Monkey King is different. He lacks cheeks.
That seems random, a bit weird.
It's a strange detail. Maybe emphasizes his non-human nature. But the Monkey King, quick as ever.
He counters. Says, ah, but I have a Sudai, a vegetarian pouch. He means his cheek pouches.
Turns the supposed lack into a clever equivalent. Resourceful.
Totally. Thinking on his feet again. It works, right?
It does. The Patriarch seems impressed, or at least accepts it. Shows how ingenuity can overcome apparent limitations.
So the Patriarch relents and offers him ways to potentially avoid the calamity's transformative powers.
Two options. The Heavenly Dipper set, which is 36 transformations.
Yeah.
The Earthly Fiend set, 72 transformations.
And guess which one our Monkey King chooses?
Uh-huh. 72, of course. More is better.
Naturally. Why learn less when you can learn more? What's that say about him?
Insatiable appetite for knowledge, for power, for mastery. It fits his ambitious, adventurous personality perfectly. He wants the deluxe package.
So the Patriarch whispers the secrets, the incantations for the 72 transformations.
And the Monkey King, being who he is, just picks it up super fast, masters them quickly.
His innate intelligence, right?
Yeah.
All that foundational work paying off, maybe?
Absolutely. His mind is prepared. He absorbs it like a sponge, testament to his talent and the preparation.
Okay, so he's got transformations down. Next up, flying. The Patriarch tests them.
Asks him to show how he travels through the clouds.
And his first try is not great. The Patriarch calls it Hu Payun.
Yeah, cloud climbing. Like scrambling, not really soaring, not too Huoyun. Cloud soaring, which should cover huge distances quickly.
So the Monkey King asks for the real deal.
And the Patriarch teaches him the legendary Ikarun, the somersault cloud.
The somersault cloud. And this thing is fast, like ridiculously fast.
One somersault, one flip covers 108,000 lies. That's what, over 33,000 miles?
Insane. In a single flip. What's the significance of that power?
It's iconic, isn't it? It represents a massive leap. Freedom from earthly limits, speed, transcendence. It symbolizes the extraordinary level he's reached. Almost godlike mobility.
But, uh-oh, with great power comes maybe a great showing off.
Seems so. He can't resist boasting to his fellow disciples about mastering the transformations.
And they're like, show us.
So he does. He transforms into a pine tree. A perfect pine tree.
The description is quite poetic.
Ooh, chance up if the monkey left. Just a perfect, resilient tree. It's impressive, technically.
But why boast? Why show off like that?
Well, it's maybe pride, immaturity, a desire for validation after working so hard in secret. Very relatable in a way.
Maybe too relatable, because all the commotion from the disciples admiring the tree
alerts the Patriarch, and he is not happy.
Furious, actually,
no.
Because the Monkey King is flaunting his powers.
Exactly. The Patriarch warns him showing off like this invites trouble. Jealousy, rivalry, people wanting your secrets, it's dangerous.
And despite the Monkey King pleading, saying sorry,
the Patriarch banishes him, kicks him out of the mountain sanctuary.
And tells him, very sternly, never, ever tell anyone you learned these powers from me. Never mention my name.
Wow. That's harsh. A huge turning point.
What's the lesson here? Why the banishment and the secrecy?
It's about responsibility, I think. Discretion, humility. Power isn't a toy. The Monkey King learned the techniques, but maybe not the wisdom to wield them properly yet.
And the secrecy.
Forces him to stand on his own two feet, makes his future path his own, detached from his master. Adds mystery. Maybe protects this Patriarch, too. Knowledge needs wisdom.
Okay. So banished. He heads back home, right?
As ordinary flesh, a challenging journey for someone starting out heavy. Today, the return was surprisingly easy.
Attaining the Tao, making the journey effortless. Unexpectedly, in an instant, seeing the Eastern Sea upon return. In the whole world, almost no one is willing to truly set their will to aspire. But if someone does set their will to cultivate the profound...
The profound clarifies itself.
To Flowerfruit Mountain.
Yeah, back to his monkey tribe.
But he finds things aren't great there. His monkeys are being oppressed by some demon.
A nasty piece of work called City Hunshi Mawan, the Mixed World Demon King.
Mixed World Demon King. Okay. And he's captured monkeys?
Yeah, total chaos while the king was away. It's like, bam, immediate real world test for his new skills.
No time to mope about being banished. Gotta use what he learned. What does this immediate conflict signify?
It grounds him instantly. Theory time is over. Now it's application. Protecting his people, fighting injustice. It gives purpose to his powers right away. Trial by fire.
So the showdown, Monkey King versus Mixed World Demon King, the demon is huge, armed.
Physically imposing. But the Monkey King.
He uses his agility, his close combat skills, and the transformations.
Right. Plucks out some hairs, chews them up, spits them out.
He creates tons of little monkey clones.
Exactly. They swarm the demon, overwhelming him. It's not just brute strength. It's cleverness, strategy, using the transformations he just learned.
And he defeats the demon, kills him.
Yep. Wins the fight, frees his monkey followers, a triumphant return.
How does that victory really show the value of his training?
It proves it wasn't just theoretical. Agility beats size, cleverness beats brute force, and the transformations are genuinely powerful tools. It validates everything he went through. Skill and ingenuity win the day.
Awesome. So, joyful reunion with the monkeys. They're amazed he's back, amazed by his powers. He even explains how he found his way home.
Overcoming magical confusion, yeah.
And then he reveals his new identity, his surname, Sun.
And his Dharma name, the name given by the patriarch, Su Fuku.
Which means awakened to emptiness.
That's pretty profound.
Deeply significant. It points to the Buddhist philosophical underpinnings of his training, understanding reality beyond just stuff. It marks his shift from just a monkey to something more.
And his subjects, his monkeys, they all decide to take his surname Sun.
Yeah, it creates this amazing sense of unity, loyalty.
Yeah.
They're the Sun monkeys now, identifying with their powerful, enlightened leader. It cements his role in their community.
So that wraps up this section. We've seen him go from, well, a naive monkey to a diligent student.
Acquiring incredible powers, both spiritual and magical.
And then immediately applying them to protect his home. It's like a mini hero's journey right there.
Absolutely. It lays all the groundwork. Mentorship, perseverance, the first taste of real-world challenges and responsibility sets the stage for everything else. And for you listening, you can probably see parallels, right? Those phases of learning something new, the grind, the breakthroughs, then actually using it.
The Monkey King's persistence, his ability to grasp those hidden meanings that resonates with anyone trying to learn or master something.